Chapter 3. This is the situation, so far as the inhabitants are concerned. The physical appearance of the country since the war began has changed greatly. In the days of peace, Cuba was one of the most beautiful islands in the tropics, perhaps in the world. Its skies hang low, and are brilliantly beautiful, with great expanses of blue, and in the early morning and before sunset, they are lighted with wonderful clouds of pink and saffron, as brilliant and as unreal as the fairy's grotto in a pantomime. There are great wind-swept prairies of high grass or tall sugar cane, and on the sea coast mountains of a light green, like the green of corroded copper, changing to a darker shade near the base, where they are covered with forests of palms. Throughout the extent of the island, run many little streams, sometimes between high banks of rock, covered with moss and magnificent fern, with great pools of clear, deep water at the base of high waterfalls, and in those places, where the stream cuts its way through the level plains double rows of the royal palm mark its course. The royal palm is the characteristic feature of the landscape in Cuba. It is the most beautiful of all palms, and possibly the most beautiful of all trees. The coconut palm, as one sees it in Egypt, picturesque as it is, has a pathetic resemblance to a shabby feather duster, and its trunk bends and twists, as though it had not the strength to push its way through the air, and to hold itself erect. But the royal palm shoots up boldly from the earth with the grace and symmetry of a marble pillar, or the white mast of a great ship. Its trunk swells in the center, and grows smaller again at the top, where it is hidden by great bunches of green plumes, like monstrous ostrich feathers, that wave and bow and bend in the breeze as do the plumes on the head of a beautiful woman. Standing isolated in an open plain, or in ranks in a forest of palms, this tree is always beautiful, noble and full of meaning. It makes you forget the ugly iron chimneys of the centrals, and it is the first and the last feature that appeals to the visitor in Cuba. But since the revolution came to Cuba, the beauty of the landscape is blotted with the grim and pitiable signs of war. The sugar cane has turned to a dirty brown, where the fire has passed through it, the centrals are black ruins, and the adobe houses and the railroad stations are roofless, and their broken windows stare pathetically at you like blind eyes. War cannot alter the sunshine, but the smoke from the burning huts and the blazing cornfield seems all the more sad and terrible when it rises into such an atmosphere, and against so soft and beautiful a sky. People frequently ask how far the destruction of property in Cuba is apparent. It is so far apparent that the smoke of burning buildings is seldom absent from the landscape. If you stand on an elevation, it is possible to see from 10 to 20 blazing houses, and the smoke from the cane fields creeping across the plain, or rising slowly to meet the sky. Sometimes the train passes 4 hours through burning districts, and the heat from the fields along the track is so intense that it is impossible to keep the windows up, and whenever the door is opened, sparks and cinders sweep into the car. One morning, just this side of Jovellanos, all the sugar cane on the right side of the track was wrapped in white smoke 4 miles, so that nothing could be distinguished from that side of the car, and we seemed to be moving through the white steam of a Russian bath. The Spaniards are no more to blame for this than are the insurgents. Each destroy property and burn the cane. When an insurgent column finds a field planted with potatoes, it takes as much of the crop as it can carry away, and chops up the remainder with machetes, to prevent it from falling into the hands of the Spaniards. If the Spaniards pass first, they act in exactly the same way. Cane is not completely destroyed if it is burned, for if it is at once cut down just above the roots, it will grow again. When peace is declared, it will not be the soil that will be found wanting, nor the sun. It will be the lack of money and the loss of credit that will keep the sugar planters from sowing and grinding. And the loss of machinery in the centrals, which is worth in single instances hundreds of thousands of dollars, and in the aggregate many millions, cannot be replaced by men, who who, even when their machinery was intact, were on the brink of ruin. Unless the United States government interferes on account of some one of its citizens in Cuba, and war is declared with Spain, there is no saying how long the present revolution may continue. For the Spaniards themselves are acting in a way which makes many people suspect that they are not making an effort to bring it to an end. The sincerity of the Spaniards in Spain is beyond question. The personal sacrifices they made in taking up the loans issued by the government are proof of their loyalty. But the Spaniards in Cuba are acting for their own interests. Many of the planters, in order to save their fields and centrals from destruction, are unquestionably aiding the insurgents in secret, and though they shout IVA ESPAA tilde plus or minus A in the cities, they pay out cartridges and money at the back door of their plantations. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.